How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com. Newsmakers talk to Jason Miller.
Howard Schmidt is the White House cyber coordinator.
It's not a matter that I have to go in and deal with people and try to sell how important cybersecurity is. The secretaries, deputy secretaries, the executive management across the departments and agencies, across the executive office of the president. One of the things that I'm really heartened by is the fact that there is tremendous attention and everybody gets it. And the issue is how do we make this better?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about long-term care, the whys, how it operates, the information you should know before you make a most informative decision. And co-host Tammy Flanagan. Tammy, good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
And, of course, Tammy, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, Federal GovExec columnist, seminar presenter, and a good friend. My name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type, and we have the pleasure here today to make all this make sense and to be played over and over on agencies' intranets as well as during the week. Paul Fort, Chief Executive Officer of the whole thing. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Bob, and thanks for having me.
Great. I see you flew up from Atlanta today.
No, from Boston.
Oh, is that what it is? And Beth O'Brien, Manager, Sales, Strategy, and Implementation.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
And Beth does many of the presentations in the area. I had the pleasure of seeing you last week.
Yeah, we do a lot of retirement seminars, not just in the air, but across the country.
You're busy right now with the open season.
We are, actually, but it's a good thing.
I can't imagine how much you all are on the road. But anyway, Paul, how does this whole thing work?
Okay, well, first of all, let's just make sure we know what we're talking about. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program, or FELTSIP, was created by the Long-Term Care Security Act of 2000, Public Law 106-265. This amended Title V of the U.S. Code to provide for the establishment of a program under which long-term care could be made available to federal employees, uniformed services personnel, and civil and military retirees. OPM is the regulator and sponsor of the program. Long-Term Care Partners, LLC, the company that Beth and I work for, is the administrator of the FELTSIP and helped OPM to launch the program in 2002. We also administer benefits, an enrollment and premium administration portal for the Federal Dental and Vision Program. Long-Term Care Partners is located in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, at Pease International Tradeport, formerly Pease Air Force Base, and still the home to the 157th Wing of the Air National Guard. We employ about 300 full-time people in Portsmouth and numerous contractors elsewhere. We are a full-service administrator handling customer service, marketing, underwriting, enrollment, billing, claims, information technology support, and security.
Wow.
That's a lot.
And you're no stranger to this either, correct? You've been around long-term care?
No, I've been in the long-term care business for over 20 years. I was one of the first, actually, to get involved in marketing long-term care insurance products in the late 80s. So it's been an interesting experience.
And you've testified before Congress, and so between the two of you, you and Beth and Tammy and me, to a very small degree, there isn't a question that can be asked that the trio can't answer.
Well, we're excited to have them on right now because we're in the midst of the I guess you'd call it second open season, because when it was initially rolled out in 2002, we had the open season to introduce the program. But now we've experienced it for 9 years. Yep. Has it been 9 years already?
It has.
And now we're going to open it up again. So could you explain, like, how this opens? Because I know it's always open. If you want to sign up for long-term care insurance, you don't really need an open season.
Right.
But we're holding this period now through, what, June 24th?
Yes.
And the purpose of the open season is to accomplish what?
Well, the real purpose of this is to offer to eligible family members a chance to apply with abbreviated underwriting, which means that they'll answer fewer questions than they would normally be expected to do if they applied at any other time during the course of the year. Because this is a short form of application, it's faster and easier.
How many questions do you have to answer?
There's only 7 questions on the abbreviated form, unless you are a spouse or domestic partner, in which case there are 9 questions. Now, normally there are close to 40 questions on the full form. So you can see how much easier it is. And the questions are relatively straightforward and very high level. For example, do you live in a nursing home right now?
Well, always question at the seminars about the one about do you attend adult daycare, because we sometimes call being at that seminar an adult daycare situation. So we weren't sure how to answer that.
But there are very high level questions. Do you currently reside in a nursing home? Do you currently use home health care?
Or do you already have Alzheimer's disease?
Do you already have Alzheimer's disease? Are you on dialysis? Are you currently using a wheelchair or an electric stairway? These things give us some insight as to the degree of either functional disability or cognitive impairment. And that's why we ask those questions. But if you can answer no to those questions, then you move on and you fill out the rest of your personal information, and that's it.
Great. I'd actually just like to pipe in here just for a moment, because it's not like everyone's eligible for the abbreviated underwriting. The folks who are eligible are actively at work federal and U.S. Postal Service employees and their spouses or same-sex domestic partners, and active members of the uniformed services and their spouses. And those are the folks who have between now and June 24th to utilize this abbreviated underwriting application. Qualified relatives of those folks, again, can apply at any time, but it's going to be a full-form application.
What about someone who already has a benefit through the federal program? Can they upgrade it during this open season with the abbreviated underwriting or not?
Well, actually, the open season is really for new applicants. So if someone is already a current enrollee, they can always call us and request to make changes to their coverage. Depending upon what they change, there might be additional health questions. So it's very important to note that current enrollees, it's not a general open season for them. It's for new applicants only.
And how would they call you?
They would call us at the 1-800 LTC Feds number, which is 1-800-582-3337.
One way to look at this is to think of it as a continuance of the rollout of the new FELDSIP 2.0 plan that we introduced in 2009. When we introduced the plan at that time, we offered it to current enrollees as an option during the special decision period. They were given the chance, if they wanted to switch from the original plan, FELDSIP 1.0, with little or no underwriting. So you might think of this as phase two of the FELDSIP 2.0 rollout. Mm-hmm. And we want to focus on trying to reach people who, for one reason or another, have not applied in the past, decided that perhaps this is not for them. We're asking them to take a harder look because we think it's extremely important for them to consider long-term care as a risk that could undermine their retirement security.
And another thing is, you know, our open seasons are very intermittent. This is the first one we've had in 9 years. And so when you look at the federal workforce and how so many of them are eligible to retire, well, it's important for them to know that abbreviated underwriting is not offered to annuitants. So we don't know when the next open season will be. This could be their last chance to apply with short-form mm-hmm. application.
Okay, and if anyone has questions, and take advantage of this panel, we're at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080, and be mindful, it's about 10:15 Eastern Time, Monday, May 2nd, 2011. We go off at about 10:58 don't call us afterwards because the phone won't be there. We'll give you a website for that afterwards. But right now, 202-465-3080. So why do I need long-term care?
Insurance. and maybe we should start with what is long-term care. I mean, you know, what are we insuring against?
Right. Well, I'll start and Beth can add anything that she likes to. But when we think of long-term care, we really should be thinking of the kind of support that we need when we are no longer able to carry on everyday routine activities in the way that we did in the past, independently and safely. So if you're having trouble moving about your house, if you need assistance getting out to the mailbox, if you are having trouble getting out of bed, if you have experienced memory loss and cannot live safely by yourself, you are probably in need of long-term care, or as the public sector now says, long-term services and support. This is different from the kind of care or treatment you would need if you had an acute health episode where you have a critical condition. That condition has incapacitated you. You might be hospitalized for it. You are receiving a special medical care. The situation is expected to resolve, and then you will either go into rehabilitation or you will continue at home with medical support. But in any event, it's not the kind of thing that long-term care is not the kind of thing that's covered by Medicare, largely, or FEHB, or TRICARE, or TRICARE for Life, or any other health program. Those programs are designed to help people with acute medical problems, not ongoing chronic debility or frailty.
But even in my seminars, when I talk to folks, I always try to have them make a distinction between the skilled care and custodial care. You know, skilled health care is going to get you better and will help out in that regard. But long-term care will help out, frankly, when you don't get better and you still just need help with basic activities of daily living or cognitive impairments.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in I think everybody's family or neighborhood where you live, you can cite somebody who's received long-term care in one form or another. Because I know in our family, my father received long-term care at home by my mother providing that care. And then eventually he ended up in a nursing home for 2 years, which depleted all the assets that were left of the family. And so we knew firsthand what that was like. And then in my mother-in-law's case, she moved in with my sister-in-law, and my sister-in-law provided the care, meaning that she had to stop working so she could be there full-time to care for my mother-in-law. And so it lost her income. And so in both of those cases, I saw reasons why there would be a need for long-term care insurance, because both of those either physically were catastrophic or financially were catastrophic incidents.
We got a phone call.
All right.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi. We're here to take your call.
Okay, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I'm 74 years old, and I have Social Security A and B, and I have Plan F, which is the supplemental. I'm just wondering at my age if I would benefit from something like this.
Are you a federal employee or retiree at this point?
I'm not a federal employee.
So you're just someone in general who has Medicare coverage and a Medicare supplement, and then you want to add to that with long-term care insurance if it's feasible, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you have to understand that with long-term care insurance, it is rated on an age basis. So the older you are at the time that you apply, the higher your premium will be. Now, I can't tell you what exactly you would pay because that depends also on the amount of coverage you purchase, the length of time that you would be protected, how much home health care there is, whether there's an inflation adjustment factor, and other variables. But you would have to be prepared to pay more. And I think that what you'd need to do is look at your resources and determine whether the benefits that you're likely to derive are worth the cost. Of course, the other important factor is what kind of family or community support you have, where you live, who might be available to assist you, and things of that kind. So it's an individual question, rather hard to answer without more information about you personally, but you could probably go on the FELTSA website and just get an idea of the cost of a basic plan at your age.
Right, because even if you're not a federal employee, that site is so comprehensive. It gives people an idea of what long-term care insurance pays for, how much does it cost generally. And so I would definitely recommend that. It's ltcfeds.com, ltcfeds.com. And that would be a good starting place for anyone who's thinking about purchasing long-term care insurance.
You know, there's actually another great website out there. Longtermcare.gov, which is the National Clearinghouse of Long-Term Care. So if there's any folks out there who are not eligible for the federal program, but they want to learn more about long-term care, longtermcare.gov is a great, you know, government resource to go to talk
this
about.
This is an HHS website and has a lot of excellent information about planning, including other vehicles that you can use, such as annuities, trusts, reverse mortgages, and so forth, that people find helpful.
And for people who are still working, I know that there is in the works, and I don't know how far we are from this or if it's even going to ever happen, but in the healthcare reform bill, there was some information about the CLASS Act, which was going to provide long-term care insurance for any American, regardless of their health. It was going to be a limited amount of coverage, from my understanding, but how far away are we from seeing something like that available?
Well, the CLASS Act, the Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Program, is, as you say, Tammy, a federally administered voluntary insurance program that's designed to help adults age 18 and over with disabilities to pay for long-term care services and supports. The work has begun. There is an office that has been set up at HHS. There are people who are staffing it. No one can say at this time when the enrollments will begin or when people will actually begin to pay premiums. We can tell you that that as of January 1 of this coming year, there's supposed to be an eligibility assessment system to determine the eligibility of enrollees who apply for services. Mm-hmm. And then in October of next year, October 2012, there is supposed, that's the deadline for a final plan design that has to be decided on by HHS Secretary Sebelius. So that's the schedule. We don't have the details. As I said, it's not finalized, but staff in that office is hard at work.
Right. So that would be another avenue for someone, whoever, whether federal or private industry, that can go out and find long-term care insurance through this program eventually. We're just not there yet.
Mm-mm. So Paul and I are in the room, and we probably have some age on the other two people in the room.
And speak for yourself, Bob.
You think, Bob?
Well, that's a compliment to him. Anyway.
I know Paul has a young son, I think.
Yeah. Well, I do, but that
doesn't mean anything about
the
your
reality.
Age.
So Paul and I might be looking around, and we see our parents needing this type care and didn't have it, and we maybe had to step in, or they had to deplete their assets. Where somebody young, like the other two people went here, when is it too young, or is it too young to start to think and maybe participate in the program? And when's the outer age? I know that's a very broad question, but people, when I was in my 30s, long-term care, what's going on at the movies? Where are we going tonight?
When you're young, obviously, when you're in your 30s and even early 40s, you're raising a family. Mm-hmm. You are paying a mortgage or trying to pay down a mortgage. You are saving for your children's college tuition.
You're maxing out retirement, hopefully.
You're hopefully maxing out
your retirement.
You're paying
for life insurance.
You're paying for life insurance, all of those things. So we don't see this as a target for people who are under the age of, say, 45. But when you get into your late 40s and early 50s, you need to be thinking more seriously about rounding out your retirement plan. And that's where long-term care comes in. As I indicated earlier, it's not covered by other forms of health insurance. It's not covered by disability insurance because disability is designed to replace your income. And most people don't save for this. Moreover, even if they did save, they would find it extremely difficult to save enough money to pay for it. So what we tell people is that by the time they're in their early 50s, they should be looking at this. The premiums are quite affordable. In fact, the average age, Beth, is 52?
52 for federal and U.S. postal employees and 45 for approved uniformed services applicants.
Right.
We had an astute financial planner on the show a few weeks ago, and he made two comments. This one always stuck with me. He says, financial planning is a succession of moving parts. So it isn't one thing. So this is a part of the moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't, like you say, at 45, it wasn't thought of before. It was just kind of out there. And I want to concentrate, like you say, on my thrift savings. I want to concentrate on making sure there's not enough life insurance, et cetera. But now, what about me?
Well, Bob, I think that that planner really nailed it. I think that it's really helpful to look at this as a part of a retirement plan. And if you do that, you will also probably conclude that one size in long-term care insurance doesn't fit all. There's not one ideal plan that ought to be purchased. Mm-mm. And everything else is forgotten. Depending on your circumstances, depending on your assets, how well you have done by the time you get into your early 50s, what inheritance you might have coming your way, businesses that you might sell, all of that. That all has to be taken into consideration so that when you design a plan, you look to, say, insure a risk. And that risk might be different from the risk that your neighbor is going to insure.
And there are different ways to actually insure that risk. Some people are risk-averse, like me. I want more coverage. Some people want to self-insure. Some people want to co-insure, where the company pays most of the long-term care bill, but they know they're going to have retirement income to offset the premium mm-hmm. cost. So there's, again, other ways to approach insuring the risk as well.
And even the type of care that you would want for yourself, you know, whether or not you'd want to make sure that you can stay in your own home, which means
sure.
you have to have enough money to stay in your own home plus pay for care in the home.
Right.
Versus are you willing to move to either assisted living or a nursing home
sure.
or a continuing care community? So those are, I think, things that I would think about in, you know, figuring out how much coverage.
Now many
want.
People begin with some kind of home health care.
Sure.
They might get informal care from a family member or a friend or a neighbor. And they may also get home health care from a home health agency professional. After a time of several years, if they begin to lose functional ability, they may have to consider assisted living where they would have access to 24-hour support. Later on, they might go into a nursing home. So all of these things need to be taken into consideration. And some people manage to stay in their homes right up till the very end mm-hmm. when they're hospitalized.
Right. I've heard in my seminars, I think it's a misconception where people think if you move into a continuing care community, which would be a place where initially it's an apartment perhaps, mm-hmm. that you're very independent, you have no disability. But if you do encounter, let's say you have a stroke and you become mm-hmm. paralyzed, you can move to another stepped up facility. But a lot of people feel that if you're in a situation like that where you're pretty much taken care of for the rest of your life, that you don't need long-term care insurance. But is that true? Is that a myth? What's behind that?
Not really. All continuing care retirement communities are a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they also don't have one size fits all. They often will step rate or increase the cost of services as they become more intensive, more labor intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing to look at is how are they changing the rates for the different levels that you might progress through. And then the other thing is, of course, whether you would have enough coverage to pay for the bills. I mean, you might want to have an additional nurse coming in or a care coordinator or somebody else that the CCRC is not providing. Certainly, if you're in independent living, you might want that kind of help.
I know, looking at just one facility with my mother-in-law while she was still living, that was one of the first questions they asked when we came in the door for the tour
yeah.
was number one question was, how much money does your mother-in-law have? Very
yeah.
blunt. And second question was, does she happen
yeah.
to have long-term care insurance?
Yeah.
Because they won't take everybody because you have to have a certain level of wealth to even get in because they know that they're going to care for you.
Long-term care insurance suggests that you have certainly done your planning.
Mm-hmm.
And even if your income or liquid assets are not adequate, you would then have that as a backstop. And they're very happy to see you if you say you do have the coverage.
Yeah, I could detect that note in the tour guide's voice when they were asking that question.
Could I ask an uninformed question? With regards to disability insurance, the premium is impacted by how long you can last before you have to apply. Does long-term care have a similar impact on the premium, whereas, okay, I need this, but I've got assets to take me from point A to point B? Is it time-sensitive between when you incur the malady, if you will, and when you need the care?
No. What happens is that, as you probably know, Bob, you are certified as needing long-term care when you meet the so-called triggers of the program, either for functional disability or cognitive impairment. And then you have a waiting period in which you are expected, in the case of the federal program now, it's 90 calendar days.
Okay.
But the premiums themselves are not affected by that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true. And the other thing you brought up by mentioning disability insurance, I hear that, and you probably do as well, Beth, in the seminars, mm-hmm. that people are confused between what's the difference between having disability insurance, which federal employees, for the most part, don't carry because they have sick leave and they have disability retirement. Or why would you need long-term care insurance on top of that?
Well, they sound the same, disability income insurance and long-term care insurance, but the reality is they operate completely different. You know, disability insurance, it's designed to replace a portion of your income if you're no longer able to work. And these funds are earmarked to pay your bills, your mortgage, your rent, your food. And at the end of the day, there's probably not a left over to pay for actual care. Another thing, but when it comes to disability insurance, is that it typically ends at the age of 65, so it's really more of a working person's benefit. Whereas long-term care, again, it pays for your actual care, and it's typically something people look as a retirement benefit that they take into retirement after the age of 65.
Right. And yeah, because when we think about federal employees who have sick leave, that's a benefit you have while you're still working. And if you become disabled while you're working, you have retirement to, again, just like you said, replace part of your income. But it doesn't necessarily, you know, leave enough left over to pay for your care.
Right. That's because your living expenses are going to go on.
That's right. You still have to pay your rent and your mortgage.
But now you have, in addition, you need assistance if you're going to be staying in your home, say.
Paul, you alluded earlier the fact that one of the things that has changed since 2002 was we had version 1.0, and now we have version 2.0. So what are some of the differences in bringing up this new program in the federal long-term care? You know, how is the version 2 different from the version 1?
Well, I can start, and then Beth can, if she wants, can fill in any gaps that there may be. I think the first thing to note is that it's even stronger in the area of home health care, even stronger. Now, the original program paid 75% of your daily benefit amount. This pays 100% of your daily benefit amount.
For care in the home.
For care in the home. We heard from a lot of people that this was their priority. They wanted to age in place. And while we thought that the original version still offered pretty generous care, reimbursements, we increased that to 100%. So now, you know, any kind of home and community-based care is covered at 100% of whatever benefit amount you elect.
Which can also be what we call an informal caregiver. Like my sister-in-law who took care of my mother-in-law, that would be eligible for that type of benefit.
We've always paid for informal care from, say, neighbors, friends. We've also increased, under FELTSIP 2.0, the care provision for care provided by family members. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to 500 days as opposed to the original 365 days.
And we actually do have a good story to tell when it comes to home care claims. Right now, about 67% of our claims are home care claims. So most people on claim are staying at home, and most of them are actually utilizing the informal care benefit.
Right. Only 10% of all of our claims are paid for people who are in nursing homes.
Right.
Now, that may change as some of our claimants age and they go through that progression that I was describing earlier. But still, for anybody who says, oh, that's nursing home insurance.
No.
Well, I say 10%. So what happened to the other 90? They're not in nursing homes. They're where they want to be.
Right.
They're either in the home or they're adult daycare during the day or they've got assisted living.
Yeah, I read a statistic that said, and maybe you can back this up, you probably know the same one, that 80% of long-term care takes place at home today.
Yep.
So where it's a family caregiver or perhaps a neighbor or even a paid professional comes into the home. And you think about that, saying that if it was me, if I had a stroke and I could no longer dress myself or bathe myself, do I really want to move into a nursing home if I can help it? You know, that's like living in an institution versus living in my home and my own bed. So that makes sense.
For as long as you can practically do that.
Right.
Now, there may come a time when you can't, but in the short term, and that short term could be years, your quality of life will be much better. Beth, do you want to talk a little bit about the stay-at-home benefit, which is another really nice feature that helps to strengthen the home care delivery?
Yeah, well, we came out with this with a rollout of FeldSub 2.0, and it's called the stay-at-home benefit. And what it really does is prep your home for a long-term care event. It's used during your waiting period, so while you're in your deductible and the clock's ticking away, basically we can do things like build a wheelchair ramp or bring durable medical equipment into the home, again, to prep your home to help you stay there longer. And I look at this sort of as a win-win. You know, people want to stay at home. For the insurance company, home care claims cost less. So it's just, again, it's just another way to keep someone at home longer.
Could you also use that stay-at-home benefit to provide training for the caregiver?
Yep.
If you wanted to use an informal caregiver to say, you know, you're going to have to lift me and you know, do things that you may not know how to do.
Get certified at a local college.
And the benefit, that doesn't come out of your daily benefit.
No, it doesn't. That's another nice thing, that during your calendar day waiting period, these benefits are available. So you can almost think of it as preparing your home, making it safer for you as a living environment, and it does not come out of your lifetime benefit pool.
Another thing that the stay-at-home benefit would pay for is sort of a personal emergency response system. You know, I live 3 hours away from my parents. They're in their mid-70s. At some point, I'm not going to feel comfortable having them be on their own. Mm-hmm. But knowing that the program would pay for that, it allows them to stay at home longer. It's just more of a buffer before a harder decision has to be made about an assisted living placement or what have you.
That would be some type of a sensor that would alert authorities know that you need help, like maybe you've fallen and you need help.
Absolutely. The old commercial.
But it's so
but
true.
But they work. And they help people stay at home, and it actually serves for the adult children as just a peace of mind thing.
Absolutely.
You might also mention the fact that we're now on, I think we did, the calendar days as opposed to expense reimbursement days.
Yep, this has to do with the waiting period. And this is sometimes very, a lot of people get confused about a waiting period when it comes to long-term care insurance. We, with the rollout of 2.0, we have one built-in type of waiting period. It's 90 calendar days. So for 90 calendar days, essentially 3 months, someone would have to, if they incurred expenses, pay for those services out of pocket before we would reimburse for a covered expense. One aspect, though, with the federal program and its 90 calendar day waiting period is that you actually don't need to incur actual expenses. So say, for example, my mom needed care and my sister and I tag team for 90 days or so. She charged us nothing. We got paid nothing. You know, day 91, if she submits a claim for covered services, we'd pay it. The company would pay it. And, you know, my mom is paid nothing out of pocket for the waiting period.
For the period of time that she was receiving care from her family.
Right.
Who determines if you need care? I mean, how does it actually work? Like, is it a doctor that has to certify it or a social worker, or could it be any of the above?
It has to be a licensed healthcare practitioner, and he or she would certify that you need assistance with 2 out of 6 basic activities of daily living. The things we really take for granted, bathing, dressing, eating, transferring, such as bed to chair or wheelchair to bed or what have you, toilet incontinence. So 2 out of 6 of those for a period of at least 90 days for any reason. Or he or she would certify that there's a cognitive impairment going on. And I have to say, that's how most long-term care insurance policy
that's
works.
That's a pretty standard
standard
requirement these days.
Yep. We received an email question yesterday that I think hits on what you all are talking about. You're digging down and being very descriptive and informative, and this email is much to that. And it goes as follows. I am in the process of evaluating several plans. It takes approximately 6 to 8 weeks to be evaluated with an outside plan. If they determine that you cannot receive preferred status, the cost would be higher. Do you think it would be better to get the government plan and later cancel it since the deadline for applying is June 24th while evaluating the outside plans? What's the cancellation policy with the government plan?
A couple different ways. There's always going to be a 30-day free look period. So if someone is applied and approved for coverage, once they receive their benefit booklet, which is basically their proof of coverage, they have 30 days within that day to either cancel the coverage and they get that month's premium back, or they can make changes to their coverage. For example, change from a 3-year benefit to a 5-year benefit with no additional underwriting. It's really up to her. I mean, if she or he, I should say, wants to apply to both and see what happens. I mean, again, they'd have an extra 30 days if she wanted to cancel the coverage and get the premium back. But
what if they got approved for both? Could they have two policies, an outside plan and the federal plan, if they wanted to maintain both, I guess?
They could, but, I mean, it's probably better to go with one full-fledged policy.
Rather than having duplicate plans.
Yeah.
I'd like to just say that if this person is shopping, two things. First of all, you know, we've been talking about the wonderful features that are quite visible, okay, that you can see. The expanded home health care, the stay-at-home benefit, the calendar days, those things. Then there's the cost, and I imagine that this person is going to be comparing costs. But I would like to call attention to what I like to refer to as what's under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
If the Feltzip were an automobile, it would be a Volvo. There's a lot of stuff.
Very safe and steady.
Built into this vehicle that most people don't get, they don't see. And as impressive as its exterior features are, these are the things that I think are actually as important, if not more important. First of all, there is the oversight of OPM and the oversight of the Congress, as well as other federal government agencies like the GAO and OMB. So we as administrators are answerable to all of those entities, and we have strict performance criteria that we have to meet, or we lose a part of our profit. There is an experience fund. This is something that's very important and very different from virtually every other program. The enabling statute, stipulates that all funds associated with the federal long-term care insurance program be in a separate account, segregated from all other assets of the insurance carrier.
So you're saying that even though John Hancock is the underwriter, they don't really keep the money. If they lose the contract, the money still stays in the program.
Everything is accounted for separately. Every dollar of premium that goes in is accounted for separately. Every charge, whether it's for a claim, whether it's for expense, profit, or anything else, is audited and has to be accounted for. So premiums that go into this program are not in any way used by the insurer.
They're not commingled.
They're not commingled yeah. with any other liabilities or used to cover any other liabilities. This is quite unique.
Mm-hmm. Could we drill down into that? Because I'm not so sure everybody grasps the benefit of that.
Well,
so this money is in a separate pot.
Yes.
That can't be used by liabilities for some other.
That's right. For life insurance, for annuities, for anything else, or even any other group of long-term care insureds who might be an individual block of insureds, a group of insureds who might be part of another employer group contract. This is as close as you're going to get to a true experience-rated contract, meaning that the experience of the federal family will ultimately dictate what the federal family pays. And I think this is very, very important, and it's not something that gets mentioned often when you hear about people comparing policies. Another thing, care coordination. We employ registered nurses with clinical experience who work very, very closely with the insured and the insured's family to make the assessments, to make recommendations as to the best plan of care, to examine and investigate facilities, to secure discounts via the discount provider network that we've built, and to do other things to support the family in what is often an extremely stressful
time. From what you've said about that, Paul, with the nurses who can help the person with the policy, you actually get assigned someone to you, and when you call back, you usually talk to that same person.
Yeah, and, you're not talking to different people.
Right.
You've got the same person there who knows you, understands your situation, understands your needs, understands your issues.
Actually, I have a good story to tell on this as well, because when we have a claimant, a client who actually has to make a claim, after we process that, we send out a survey. And they don't have to fill it out, but for the ones that do fill it out, we always get very high with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5. And we're judged on things like timeliness, accuracy, the value of the communications. And I'll say that when it comes to claims paying, we pay about 98% of our claims, and we pay them within 5 days. So we're in the business to help these people out.
And let me just mention one other thing, because we're talking about what's under the hood. Again, this is never talked about when there are comparisons being made by people who are selling other products. But there is independent third-party review. If you are not satisfied with the settlement of your claim for whatever reason, and you appeal it, which you can do, and the appeal is or the decision of the insurer is sustained, you then have the option to have your entire file presented to an independent third party, a professional who has expertise in the particular area of disability or cognitive impairment that you are suffering from. That person would review the file, review all the facts pertaining to your case, and make a decision. If that person finds in your favor, the decision is binding on the insurer and we pay the claim. So these are some of the protections that I think people need to look at. Yes, they should look at the features and the benefits, and yes, they should look at the cost, but they also want to take a look at these other protections that I've been talking about, because long-term, they may be even more important mm-hmm. than what they thought was important when they first started shopping.
Beth, isn't there a worksheet on the LTCfeds.com website that can be used by somebody who is trying to shop around and stack a private plan up against the federal plan?
Yep. If you go to LTCfeds.com, at the top, there's a tab called Information and Forms, and it's called the Benefits Comparison Worksheet, essentially, where we pre-fill all the features of federal long-term care 2.0 program on a grid, and then there's on the right side sort of empty spots where someone can kind of fill in the blanks and do a side-by-side comparison. And we really do encourage people to shop and compare. You know, there is no one best policy for everybody. We think we have a very good one, and we want folks to take a look. But at the end of the day, you got to go with the best fit for you and your family.
Right.
And as long as you've done your homework, then you're done.
That's right. So bottom line here is informed decision-making. And this is something also that is enjoined in the enabling statute and that OPM has supported from day one, that is trying to promote education and awareness about long-term care plan design, long-term care issues. And that's why our website is information rich and now has a number of decision tools. So you can go there and work with it and come up with the decision that is right for you.
And another thing I actually always like is when I go out and talk to folks during a seminar, or if you call the 800 number, which is 800-LTC-FEDS, and talk to a certified consultant, you know, none of us work on commission. We're here to provide information only. And we can provide you information about the federal program. We can give you tips, at least, to look at other programs outside the federal option. But again, it's really just information and a resource only.
So if I'm a little computer-phobic, which I am, I can call, what's that, go slow, what's that 800 number?
It's 1-800-LTC-FEDS, and I'll spell that out in numbers. It's 1-800-582-3337.
Very good.
Thank you, Bob.
I could even remember that.
We did get a couple of other questions in that I wanted to try to, because we're going to run out of time before we know it.
Very astute.
I know. So here's one. It came in. It said, my wife and I are current long-term care policy holders who elected the future purchase options, which I know in a later show and later in the open season, we're going to talk more about the different options. But what this guy wants to do is he wants to know if he can switch from one version to another. Can he change options? Is that possible?
From future purchase, can he change
to automatic inflation?
The answer is it depends. It depends on what version of the program he has. If they have FELTSIP 1.0 and they receive their offer at the time when we make the FPO offer, which will be this fall, they can switch to the automatic compound inflation at that point with no underwriting.
So that's going to happen later this year.
Later this year.
Does that happen every year?
It's every 2 years, actually.
Every two years.
Okay. If they have 2.0, they can switch, request a switch, I should say, to the automatic compound, but there's going to be more health questions. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, they're going to have to underwrite that event. So it depends on which policy they have.
So the best thing would be to contact long-term care partners and go over it with you on the phone.
Yes.
Another question came in. It says, how are the underwriting decisions made? We're interested in increasing our daily benefit for my wife, who has a policy under the federal plan. We understand from long-term care partners that a participant is limited to one policy. So that, in other words, you can't buy a second policy through the federal plan. Mm-hmm. And we just received a quote for a blended rate policy. So I guess that means a policy that she purchased when she originally bought it at her age then. Mm-hmm. And now she's going to add to that policy at her current age. Mm-hmm. So there's a rate that's combining both
her. Right. Yeah, she get credit for what she had, and then the additional coverage would be underwritten and the premium blended.
Right. Another thing about age, I know my husband, because I'm looking at this for him, he's a current federal employee and he hasn't yet purchased. I have, he hasn't. But he has a birthday coming up May 23rd. So he should really be looking at this before his next birthday, right?
He probably should. It'd be cost for any long-term care based on age. They are.
Right.
And it's
right.
on your whole age. So even if he's 53 and 11 months, he's still 53.
The question, though, was how are underwriting...
Hi, Brian.
How are underwriting decisions
made? It's
really
made? Only 29.
And I think that let's just say that, in short, the underwriter reviews all of the information in the application and tries to determine whether your health is typical or average for your age group. You're not going to be, if you're 73, you're not going to be evaluated on the same footing as someone who is 46. So what they tend to do is, and that's even with respect to health conditions, a condition that might be more worrisome for a younger person may not cause the underwriter much concern if it's for a person who's in his mid to late 70s.
I know I've found that to be true even when buying life insurance, because I bought my first policy when I was 29, and it was basically call them up on the phone and get the policy. I went to renew it when I was 49. It was a whole different story.
Sure, yeah. Sure is.
A few more questions.
Not nice questions.
Well, in fact, they came out to the house to do the underwriting for that one. But that's another point to make, because when you're buying life insurance, I think the insurer is looking how quickly you're going to die. Where with long-term care insurance, the underwriting's different, isn't it?
Sure. Well, what they're trying to determine is the likelihood that you will become dependent, either in with respect to functional abilities or cognitive skills.
Right, because it's insurance while you're still living.
And and when that might happen, and how severe it would be, and how long you might be in that condition. That is really what the actuary, they refer to that as morbidity. Mm-hmm. And that is a difficult thing to be able to price because of changes in medicine, in therapy, in surgery, and other factors. Not to mention diet. So that's hard for them to arrive at.
But the good thing is we're in a current open season. And so if you utilize the abbreviated underwriting application, there really are 7 health questions. One thing you'll notice if you look at the application, which you can download at ltcfeds.com, that's it. We don't ask for what medications you take. We don't ask for you to sign off. I mean, unless you're applying for an unlimited benefit, we don't sign off to ask for a physician's record. We also don't ask things that are questions about your lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
your height, your weight. Do you drink every day? How much? We don't ask that. It mm-hmm. truly is the easiest time that someone's going to apply and get coverage is during the FELTA pulpit season.
Another thing I thought about for someone like my husband, which probably relates to a lot of federal employees, is that because of his age, he's approaching the next break point for FEGLI, which is life insurance, where it's going to go up. It's actually going to double next year when he turns 55. So if we can agree on this between us as a family to reduce some of that life insurance because our kids are grown, the house is mm-hmm. almost paid off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We could almost take the money we save and apply that to his long-term
trade the
care
premium,
policy.
Essentially, sure.
Which is going to help me, too, since I'll be the caregiver. I'm going to find a way to get him in this policy. One thing before, I know we're going to be off the air soon, and I keep looking at that clock, and there are so many questions I have, but Paul, I was hoping maybe you would just address briefly, because there was a price increase that occurred around the time you rolled out the 2.0 version, and there was a lot of talk about that and worry about, you know, why are we raising the prices, and did that happen to private policies, and how was that justified, and why did that happen?
Sure.
In 2 seconds or less.
that may be a challenge. No. The rate increase to which you're referring took place in 2009. It was determined to be necessary because the funding within the Experience Fund was believed to be inadequate. That was arrived at after a great deal of examination by the insurance company actuaries, by an independent actuary hired by OPM to review everything, by OPM's own actuaries. Looking at various assumptions, the assumptions had changed somewhat. There were fewer people who were dropping the policy than was believed would be the case at the beginning, but more important, it was a very tough investment environment. The very low rate of interest affected return on the bonds that were used as the staple of investment for the investment fund, and it was determined that a rate increase was necessary. As I explained, all of that additional premium goes into the Experience Fund. If it's not needed in the future, it could be returned in the form of either benefit enhancements or premium holidays. But in short term, it was needed. People were also given options if they didn't want to pay it. They could either reduce their benefit, they could drop down to a different inflation adjustment, and many did. Mm-hmm. So not everybody who was faced with that that increase actually paid it. A lot of people avoided the increase by taking one of the options.
Right. Yeah, I know I faced that myself. And I think of it this way, too, is the fact that if we didn't have that rate increase, you know, we would face the possibility someday where we may not have long-term care insurance. So what's worse, you know, not having coverage or having to pay either more or have...
And as you said, a lot of rates have been increased by insurers in the market.
Right, not just the federal.
All righty. To bring it to the smooth landing, Paul, final comments?
Well, as Beth was saying, the open season is a wonderful opportunity for those people who are not yet enrolled, who are thinking of retiring in the near future. They should look into it, visit the website, and think about how to get into the program so that they can improve their retirement security.
Beth?
Yep, and we'll actually be back in June, and we'll talk more about the nuts and bolts of the policy, how to build a plan. If you want, though, you can go to www.ltcfeds.com/webinar. Sign up for a webinar we're having on May 10th.
Perfect. Okay, I'm going to have to cut Tammy short.
That's okay.
But Tammy will be on next week, and Mike Townsend will talk about transitions. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week. Bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.